90.1 FM, this is KPFT Houston. And now, Houston's only primetime radio program dedicated to news and concerns of the lesbi, gay, and transgender community. This is Queer Voices.
Good evening, this is Jack Valinsky.
And Jennifer Renee.
Brian Levinka.
Summer Iman. And it's my birthday!
Yay!
And tonight on Queer Voices, we have J.D. Doyle's monthly Queer Music Heritage in our second hour. But first, a wrap-up of Gay Pride this past weekend and events leading up to it. Also, a discussion of changes in the HISD anti-discrimination and anti-bullying policies. Then in news wrap, the New York Senate made history twice last Friday by approving legislation to open civil marriages to same-gender couples and by being the first Republican-controlled legislative body to do so. A judge in Wisconsin has issued a rule upholding that state's domestic partnership registry, and lawmakers in Tennessee are being sued for passing a bill which prohibits local jurisdictions from enacting anti-bias legislation that includes protections for GLBT people. In the feature segment from This Way Out, an in-depth look at the legalization of gay marriage in New York State, with comments by President Barack Obama and several House and Senate legislators. Then at 10 o'clock, J.D. Doyle's Queer Music Heritage focuses tonight on Stephen Grossman. He's one of J.D.'s queer music heroes. J.D. says that he has been waiting years to do this show about Stephen Grossman, and you can see several pages devoted to the artist on J.D.'s website. Just Google Queer Music Heritage. Jack?
Well, that sounds real exciting.
I hope everybody had a good time Saturday.
Yeah, we're going to be talking about that. And, you know, next week we'll also be on the air, just to let everybody know, during the 4th of July. So if you don't want to hear...
During the fireworks.
Yes, during the fireworks.
We'll be here.
And I thought they were going to ban the fireworks.
Not here in Houston.
Ah, okay.
Not here in Houston. So, and we're also going to be playing a special out music from J.D. Doyle, that he does another show besides Queer Music Heritage. So that'll be happening.
Yay.
Of course, David Elliott will be joining us, too. So that's, you got 2 weeks of knowing what's going to be on Queer Voices. And yes, this is traditionally the sort of wrap-up of Pride Show. We did a version of that on After Hours, where we just talked for like an hour and a half. So this
we
is going to be a little bit
too.
More concise.
Yes.
To talk about Pride. First of all, Brian was Grand Marshal this year.
Yay, Brian.
Yes.
Congratulations.
Thank you.
And you were excellent. You were a wonderful Grand Marshal.
Well, you know, it's kind of surreal because you're going down the parade route and everyone is looking at you. And you're waving to people that you don't know, and you're kind of like, you see people you know and you try to wave to them, and then people after the fact say, oh, I waved at you and I couldn't wave back because I didn't see them. It's just a massive crowd. And I've heard estimates of between 150 and 250. I think KHOU was reporting 250,000, but I saw in the Chronicle today 150,000. So
it's all made up, believe me.
Yeah, it's hard to
tell. The Pride Committee will say something, the media will repeat it, and then it goes back and forth, and that's how that all works out, because the Houston Police Department does not give official counts.
Well, it's almost impossible to do so.
Well, I did see like a big rainbow helicopter flying over the whole time with like a rainbow on it. I don't know if anybody...
I missed that.
Well, I was looking up, and I heard the helicopter and had, like, a rainbow flag on it. So I was like, maybe the official Pride counter or crowd counter. I don't know.
Or it could have been the FBI or CIA watching us.
Absolutely. Homeland Security.
Certainly
Rick Perry and his squad, maybe.
That used to happen. But I was. It was a very nice parade. I was in it because I was with my boss, Councilmember Jones. But it was, you know, there was close to 100 units there.
I have heard comments that it went very fast this year.
Yes, it was over by 10:20. That's the earliest the nighttime parade's ever been.
My car was 70, unit 70, and it was just before 10:20 that I turned the corner at the end.
And I think it would have actually went a little bit faster if they had better directions at the end of the parade, because there was nobody from Pride there. It was all the Houston Police Department directing where the units were supposed to go. And so it was a little
It
bit
was of kind of a little cluster.
Yes,
thing.
Yes.
We're kind of bogged down.
And everybody got jammed up there at the end.
And we were the first. We were probably the cause of the bogging down, because we were the first Grand Marshal that stopped because we were didn't know whether to go down Levitt or go down Taft.
Mm-hmm.
So we probably held up the parade. So we just decided to go back to the beginning of the parade in the back streets, which is kind of hard to do riding on the back of a convertible.
You didn't know how to do that like Sean Carter. Sean Carter used to know how to be in the beginning of the parade and the end of the parade, and I think one year he actually was in the parade three times.
You could have turned around, run all the way back, and then come up the end.
I could have done that. Huh?
You could have done that.
I miss Denise and Kathy. I'm sad.
You know, it was interesting. There was a number of blogs that actually had pictures. The Chronicle, the Houston Press, Culture Map. And I was really impressed with that those pictures were out there so quickly. And that's how things have changed. We didn't used to get those pictures so early.
We also, there was a photo essay by our friend Daniel Williams in the Dallas Voice today.
Oh, really?
Yes.
Wow.
So we got some, and I was in it, so. Yeah, so we got a little bit of northern coverage from the Dallas Voice.
That's great.
So yeah,
that's great.
Well, and one of the reasons why we celebrate Pride is the fact that this is something that in 1969, we've talked about this before, there was a riot at Stonewall Inn, and that sort of sparked a whole movement of Pride celebrations around the world, and there's somewhere upwards of a couple million people who participate in the parades. It's not counting the audience, just the people who participate in parades. And there are, some of them happen at that last full weekend in June. Some of them happen at different parts of the year. For example, in Sydney, there's a gay Mardi Gras that happens in the early spring, their fall.
Mm-hmm.
And it's just an incredible thing that happens. And we have this night parade, which is rather unusual. And actually, we got some of the ideas and pointers of how to do that from Sydney because they did that. Their parade was always at night.
Now, they call that gay Mardi Gras, didn't they?
Gay Mardi Gras, yes. Yes, and it's an incredible organization. I know, you know, a lot of these organizations that have been around forever, every so often in that history, they'll have a problem and they'll have to either reform or a new organization takes over. But, you know, certainly San Francisco and New York and Los Angeles, Minneapolis, those are big organizations. Chicago, of course. And I don't know if you heard this, but in Chicago, right before the parade, they found, or early that morning of their parade on Sunday morning, the float company found that there were 50 tires that were slashed.
Oh, really?
And from what I know about Chicago, that nothing like that's ever happened before. And luckily, they were able to patch it up and make it work, and congratulations to them. And I think some of those people that are doing Pride there in Chicago have been doing it since 1970, yeah, which is absolutely incredible. They probably have the longest longevity of any organization around the world. So it's not only here in Houston, but we are the largest in the Southwest, and the night parade sort of really put Houston on the map. And one of the reasons, as I said, that was the thing that sparked it in 1970, but in a lot of our communities, we keep making more strides. Over the past week, late last week, was New York voting on gay marriage, same-sex marriage.
I happened to be watching Rachel Maddow that night, and they did it live, showing the votes.
And it was incredible because that's the first time it was ever passed with a majority Republican Senate, their Senate there. And those senators, those brave senators that voted for it, and some of them were against it at the beginning but realized that was the right thing to do, they're going to be targeted. And Joe Solomies was on TV today saying, you know, they're going to do what they can to protect those people to stay in office because they were so brave to do it. And in fact, I heard there were some people in New York. Well, there apparently was a gathering that Friday night at Stonewall.
Yes, there was.
Which was really incredible. But some of them were yelling Cuomo for president. That, you know, and there's T-shirts up in New York that say "Evolve already" to, to let the president know.
Yeah, New York, I do kind of.
Really?
I saw some shirts that they're
That's
doing.
Cool. I like that.
They're cashing in on the gay marriage thing, and I think, you know, go see a Broadway show, get married.
Yes, the florists are all getting ready.
The one wonderful weekend.
It's going to take 30 days before they do that, and there probably will be some lawsuits, but I think it's very hard in New York to overturn something like that.
I've heard it's very hard to do that, and it would have to be some sort of like state constitutional amendment or something to override all that, but it would be very hard. Did you see in the Chronicle, and I think in other online things about our local couple, Tony and Bruce, Bruce Smith and Tony Carroll.
I missed that. Tell me about it.
No, they were in the Chronicle today talking about how they had gotten married in Ontario, Canada. And they're now going to go in 31 days, I think, to go to New York and get married. So they'll have a United States wedding. And they've been together for decades.
As long as we can ever remember.
Right, yes. Right. So it's always been Tony and Bruce.
A little bit of local publicity for that.
One of the sad notes that recently came out in the news was that the state did not pass the HIV medication for people who cannot afford or do not have health insurance. And it's like $19 million short, so there will be numbers of people dropped off that program and new people cannot join it. And that's going to be, we'll hope to do a segment in that shortly. We've talked about that earlier, but it's I don't know what the community is going to do because that's just devastating.
It means people will die.
People will die, absolutely.
It's a death sentence. The legislature just issued a death sentence to some people.
And it's the people that need it the worst that are going to be most affected.
Yes, absolutely. And in reality, it's going to cost the state more
because
that people will end up in the state, the county hospitals, sicker, sooner. The medications have been just an incredible extension of life and quality of life besides that, since they've been much more protected in the past number of years. So this is just going to backfire on the state. And then we got a governor that's probably going to run for president touting out how he saved all this money. In reality, he's, you know, a lot of people will be hurt over that.
He's hurting people. He's cutting our education. I saw something today where they're going to lower the salaries for teachers to keep them from being furloughed. But, I mean, what more? How much more insult to injury can you give to teachers?
The future of any state or city is its education. I mean, education is the future. You can't build a brighter, bigger future if you don't have an educated population, people to do the work, who are able to be inventive, creative.
Jennifer, I think you're looking past the 2012 presidential election. I don't think Perry is.
Well, of course not. I mean, yes, he saved money. Yes, he did that. What irked me, being a native Texan, was the fact that he was touting how he had all these balanced budgets and neglected to say that, well, the Constitution says you have to have one.
Exactly. And the whole rainy day fund could have been used to save people's lives or to boost our education, what it was originally designed for.
Okay, now the good news.
Good news, okay.
HISD, the Houston Independent School District, which is one of the largest in the country,
yes,
this past week passed a non-discrimination, anti-bullying, full inclusive protection for students. And the vote was 7-0.
Yes.
And they had the first reading, which means it's going to come back up again in August in their next board meeting, for the same thing for employees, which includes teachers. And that preliminary vote was also 7-0. There were two absent, but that's an incredible, overwhelming vote. And it's the first time in this area of the country that a legislative body has passed this type of pro-non-discrimination ordinance. And what this is going to do is set such an example to the kids. And, you know, one of the things I do at Pride is I sort of go around to all the other groups and sort of give a little pep rally speech and thank them for being in the parade. And even though I have no official capacity to do it, I do it anyway.
You're the unofficial.
You're the official greeter. Official unofficial greeter.
Yes. And I
cheerleader.
And I will be honest with you, I stole that speech from Ray and I tuned it up again because he used to do that. And I just thought that was so incredible because I'm in so many other parades that I go to and it's just like, why are we, you know, do we really know why we're here? And that's what I try to do, just give a little brief, you know, we're doing this. But this incredible thing that happened at HISD, I have to give so much credit to Jennifer Renee Poole, who's been working on it for 2.5 years. Christopher Bugsby, who's been doing it for about 2 years. Yeah. You've been working together on that.
It's been a total of, since January of 2009, actually, so almost 3.5 years.
That is absolutely incredible. And you've been working behind the, behind the scenes to do this very quietly, to lobby the board.
Yeah, first it was the Saavedra administration when he was superintendent, and he had promised the caucus, the GLBT community, that he would put forth a non-discrimination language before the board. And, of course, he did not. He sort of lied to everybody, lied to the unions, lied to everybody. However, that was undaunted. I just kept on going because that was a promise, and I just kept working on it. What was good, though, was when HISD hired a new superintendent.
Yes, and then we've had two new school board members that were also in there that worked also
and,
on that. Anna Eastman and Juliet Chappette.
Yes, but in addition to that, it's either the administration that blocks what's on the agenda or the president of the board. So we, during all of this, we had two presidents that would never put it up before a vote. And you had an administration at first of Avedra's who wasn't going to do it. And so it was only with a change in the board and the election of Paula Harris in January that really made the difference. It all just came together. All of the hard work and legwork from the past years all came together with that.
Well, it was really interesting because I attended that board meeting, first time I've ever been to a HISD board meeting, and when this was brought up, well, there's a number of other things brought up. The big thing that was going on there was the budget, and they passed that, and it was, you know, a little bit painful because they had to lay off some teachers and cut back on some stuff because of the state budget, because they get money from the state. But they brought this up and they opened it up for, you know, and it's different than the way the city does their meetings and how they, you know, I didn't quite understand it all, but until
you
I
have
saw,
to have gone a few
yes,
times
yes,
to figure it
exactly. But I was sitting there with some wonderful friends, including Christine Williams, and Chris Bugsby was there, and Josephine Titsworth was there.
Yes,
so,
Josephine.
So that was the group there. And when they were talking about this, there was actually a teacher, a kindergarten teacher, who gave this most incredible speech about how he got these incredible reviews for about how he taught, but yet he was singled out because he was a gay person, and they made his life difficult, and they even told the parents about him being gay just to get them to turn against him. And you know, it was just so amazing because and there was a few other speakers doing that, but when they actually talked about it, the board talked about it, including Larry Marshall. I mean,
yes, that was a real turnaround in people.
Yes. And Richard Murray was there in the audience, and so was Gene Locke, who ran against Anise 2 years ago. And I saw it when this thing happened, they all clapped. And it was like nobody spoke against it. And the other interesting thing is that, you know, there was two TV trucks there covering this meeting. And on the news, there was no mention of it because the big story, of course, was the budget.
The budget
was passed.
They came for the budget, but the history was made.
Yes. And the first thing I saw in the press was today. The Houston Press actually had a little story about it. So this is something we really, you know, and unfortunately, most people in the parade didn't know that. But this is a great thing because, you know, we do not have any protection from the city, the county, or the state. But we have this protection now from HISD, which is one of the largest school districts in the country.
And hopefully this will be a bellwether for other school districts who are on the margin and may have been considering something like that, will move on and do so. For on a personal basis, the fact that this is an inclusive language, but it is the most inclusive language of any school district, because it includes sexual orientation, gender identity, and or expression. The expression part is the real change that truly makes it inclusive, because you don't have to necessarily be gay or trans to be discriminated against.
Right.
You can just be different. And the expression part covers that part of it. And this is incredible.
Why do you think that's happening now? Is this a result of the bullying and the suicides and all the drama with that and all the...
I believe that was the catalyst that really brought home to someone, to the board member's heart. The administration has been on board for a year or two. It was the board members that touched their heart that, in fact, they were voting on something that was actually going to protect kids.
Right. All kids.
All kids. Not just the selected ones. Not just, you know, it was all kids. And the primarily, the bullying is about just being different. know, and that's probably the thing that got. I can only speak from my own personal experience. I just happened to be small. You know, wasn't gay or anything. I was just a small child, but was bullied incessantly because I was different.
Anyone can be bullied.
So this is why we celebrate Pride, these accomplishments, and the fact that we still have some concerns around here. There have been some beatings in the neighborhood. Things are tough. I mean, businesses, you know, we're all suffering from the economic ways things are now, but we have this one thing to be really proud of, because the reality is we are behind the curve of most major cities of not having any type of protection.
And of equality for everyone. It was very timely that it occurred and the vote occurred here during Pride Week. I mean, that's...
Well, the gay marriage in New York, too.
Yes, it sort of all came together, and it was a beautiful thing.
There's hope.
Yes, there's hope, but there's even new possibilities for more. We're in a city that is dynamic. It has a population that's heart is open to the differences that make up our city. Richard Murray, as well as Kleinberg.
Kleinberg, yes.
Yes. All say that we are the prototype city for the 21st century. For the rest of the United States, because of our diversity.
To be that type of city, we have to have some type of written non-discrimination ordinance within the city. We do not have that.
I think the time has come.
That indicates. I do too.
I think the wave is coming, and it's around the corner. Well,
it doesn't. It does not happen without people working behind the scenes to do it.
And you have to work. And this is what I learned coming out of this is that I had hoped years ago that this was. Because it's the right thing to do.
I don't know how anybody can argue for the discrimination to have some sort of, you know, not have a protection. I'm like, why not protect a certain, you know, a whole group of people? I don't see the counter argument to it.
Well,
but I guess
let me share you some of the arguments that I heard to that was the fact that we protect everyone as covered under Title VII. Of the Civil Rights
what is
Act,
that? I don't
but
know.
that's ethnicity, country of origin,
right.
Those, but doesn't have anything to do with sexual orientation
right.
or gender identity or expression. That was an argument, and another argument that's shallow to say the least was if we protect the gays and the transgenders, what if somebody's fat? Are we going to have to put in that language that you can't discriminate against fat people? And I said, if there's some people being bullied because they're fat, yeah, go back and put the language in. Because this is about protecting children and people's jobs and livelihoods.
Exactly. And there's no protection.
No. Jack, you were mentioning about the kindergarten teacher. One of the things we ran into in a term that I heard numerous times when I was talking to some of the teachers was employee terrorism. As long as there's not in writing a non-discrimination, anybody who happens to be gay or trans person, they can be terrorized. I'm going to out you if you don't do this, that, and another. That's terrorization,
exactly.
You know, and extortion, if you will.
Extortion.
And the fact is that they have to live in fear constantly. And the fact is they may be out elsewhere, but they have to be so closeted at work simply because they could lose their job.
Right.
Now, after August, they won't have to worry about that.
It's also harder nowadays to lead separate lives because with things like Facebook and social networking.
Yes.
How do you share your life, you know?
Only to a certain select group of people.
Exactly. So that's really difficult to do now. I also want to thank the After Hours crew for taking on the responsibility for building the KPFT float.
Oh, here, yes. Here.
And every year we sort of run into the same thing that they're looking for all of us, especially those of us who produce queer programming to help out. And usually us people from Queer Voices are so busy doing other things within the parade or festival working that we just don't have time to do it. So I really appreciate the fact that After Hours did it and they gave Queer Voices credit that we probably probably didn't
know.
Deserve it.
Yeah, they had our logo and our name.
They're part of the gay family.
Absolutely.
Helping us out, yeah.
So, and I was impressed the first time that the NASA employees, the GLBT NASA employees
yes.
were there.
I thought that was great.
Yes, and Macy's was there. Mm. Of course, United Continental. And it's, I mean,
Shell.
You know, and these groups that have, you know, either been in the parade for a long time, J.P. Morgan Chase, all of those, Chase, I guess it's just now, right?
Chase, yeah.
Chase. So that's great. And people don't realize that it took us so long to have these corporations to be part of the parade, to say that we're part of mainstream America. But then, of course, there's also those other wonderful organizations, the churches that are in the community, Hatch. Hatch had a great group.
Oh, didn't they, though?
Yes.
Oh, they were great.
I like the lesbians over age 50.
Hey, over 50, the Loaf.
Loaf. I love that.
Well, and the Bears had this.
Had a little tub up there, having a little rub-a-dub in
yes,
the tub.
Yes, yes, yes. And I didn't even realize that at the time, because I was just so involved in other parts of it. But I also noticed that the crowd was just absolutely going crazy.
They were having fun.
They really were having a great time.
You know, during the day it was excruciatingly hot, but at night it wasn't, the humidity was down. It was kind of a crisper night, and it wasn't.
There was a little bit of a breeze blowing.
Yeah.
Well, there was a bit of a breeze, too, enough.
I do think moving the parade up a half an hour was not the best idea, but I don't know how we could fight that.
Well, I was at the front of the parade.
Yes.
I went down in the light for half of it, so it wasn't dark.
Yeah, and even the mayor remarked about how she liked the earlier time. I didn't like the earlier time because the whole idea of this was a nighttime parade, and originally I think we started at 9 p.m., but then I was able to move it up 15 minutes because it just got dark enough at that time.
Right. I think the 8:45 would be a good time again. But at the pace of the parade this year, I think it would have been over in time by 11 if you'd moved it up.
Yeah. Well, I was very much impressed, having been to numerous pride parades, that they really did try to keep the spacing tight that you didn't have these big, long
I don't know how that happened, because I didn't see any parade marshals along the route.
They did this year is they had a rear wheel monitor, someone between each of the entries.
Yes.
So they had two on the side, two wheel monitors, and one behind, and that was kind of keeping the pace behind you.
Exactly, keeping the spacing.
Right.
And I did see there were a couple of times that the car I was in, it would, you know, it slowed down a little bit, and we got too far, and suddenly somebody stepped out of the sidelight with a little glow stick and said, "Speed up." So somebody was there.
Pride does not have public meetings anymore, as far as I can tell. But I know they're always looking for at least they say they're looking for volunteers. I'm not sure how you get involved, because I've tried over the past couple of years to get involved, at least just a little bit. But anyway, it's pridehouston.org, and you can reach them at their website. There's a place to fill out if you'd like to be a volunteer. And, you know, I still give them all credit for all the work they did to pull this thing together.
It's amazing.
I also did want to mention that the Friday night event at Discovery Green that was put on by MyHouston.com, which is sort of part of the city, part of the tourist bureau, was just a fabulous event. Anthony Rapp was there.
I missed it.
And it was a Discovery Green, which just is such a perfect venue to have an outside concert. And there was a lot of, like, non-gay people just walking through because they happened to be in that part of town, and everybody just seemed to enjoy it. And the music wasn't too loud, so you can still talk if you wanted to, and there was a number of different booths there. So it is time for us to go. Thank you for joining us, and we've got This Way Out coming up next.
Traditionally, marriage has been decided by the states. And right now, I understand there's a little debate going on here in New York.
I know this is a tough vote, and I want it. There are only heroes in this chamber today. There are no villains here. There are only heroes.
This state, when it is at its finest, is a beacon for social justice.
Welcome to This Way Out, the International Gay and Lesbian Radio Magazine. I'm Greg Gordon.
New York crosses the threshold to marriage equality. Partnerships are endorsed in Liechtenstein and Wisconsin. And police protect protested pride parades in Sofia, Zagreb, and Budapest. Those stories and more this week because you've discovered This Way Out.
I'm Rick Watts.
And I'm Chris Wilson.
With News Wrap, a summary of some of the news in or affecting the lesbian and gay community for the week ending June 25th, 2011.
Ayes 33, nays 29.
The New York Senate made dual history on June 24th by opening civil marriages to same-gender couples and by being the first Republican-controlled legislative body to do so. The marriage equality bill passed there by a vote of 33 to 29 late in the evening, and Governor Andrew Cuomo signed it into law less than 90 minutes later. 29 of the Senate's 30 Democrats voted for the bill, along with four of the body's 32 Republicans. The final version passed easily earlier that day in the Democratic-controlled state assembly before the Senate followed suit. Same-gender couples can begin marrying in the Empire State on July 24th, and there's no residency requirement. Some activists say civil marriage equality in New York, in what is now by far the most populous state in the nation to have it, marks the end of the road for its opponents. Game over, said Kate Kendall, executive director of the National Center for Lesbian Rights. Now that we've made it here, we'll make it everywhere, said Freedom to Marry President Evan Wolfson, calling it an epic win. In New York City, at least 1,000 people took to the streets in celebration outside the Stonewall Inn in Greenwich Village. When police made an early attempt to clear the unauthorized street party, those gathered reportedly chanted, "We're here, we're queer, we're fabulous, don't fuck with us." Unlike California and some other states, New York voters cannot undo laws or amend the state's constitution. Marriage equality opponents would have to pass a repeal measure through the legislature or call a constitutional convention. Both possibilities are extremely unlikely. Lesbian and gay couples can also marry in Connecticut, Iowa, Massachusetts, New Hampshire, Vermont, and Washington, D.C. Same-gender marriages from elsewhere are recognized as marriages in Maryland, New Mexico, and Rhode Island. 10 countries allow gay and lesbian couples to marry: Argentina, Belgium, Canada, Iceland, the Netherlands, Norway, Portugal, South Africa, Spain, and Sweden. Same-gender couples can also marry in Mexico City, but they're recognized nationwide.
Voters in the tiny European nation of Liechtenstein overwhelmingly endorsed a new law this week that creates registered partnerships for same-gender couples. The government reported that almost 69% approved the measure and about 31% opposed it in a binding referendum on June 19th. The partnerships law had originally been passed by the legislature. Opponents, led by Roman Catholic groups, had forced the public vote, charging that the new law would weaken the so-called traditional family. Liechtenstein is a small Alpine nation bordered by Switzerland and Austria, with about 35,000 citizens in 11 different towns. It's reportedly the richest country on the planet on a per capita basis, and like neighboring Switzerland, it's a favorite tax haven for the world's wealthy. Registered gay and lesbian couples in Liechtenstein will now have inheritance, social security, immigration, and taxation rights equal to those of married heterosexual couples. They will not be allowed to adopt children, however, nor access reproductive medical services.
Also in the U.S., a Wisconsin judge ruled this week that the state's domestic partnership registry doesn't violate the state constitution's definition of marriage as heterosexual only. Dane County Circuit Judge Daniel Mosher concluded that the registry doesn't even remotely resemble marriage because same-gender domestic partners in the state have far fewer legal rights, duties, and liabilities in comparison to the legal rights, duties, and liabilities of spouses. Voters amended the Wisconsin Constitution to ban civil marriage for gay and lesbian couples in 2006. The domestic partnership registry was created by state lawmakers in 2009. The right-wing group Wisconsin Family Action filed the lawsuit challenging the registry last year, and its leadership vowed to appeal this week's ruling all the way to the state Supreme Court if necessary. The LGBT advocacy group Fair Wisconsin said it would continue to defend the registry through the appeal process, but its director Katie Bellinger said the initial ruling made it a great day for Wisconsin. The registry grants lesbian and gay couples limited rights, including the right to visit each other in hospitals, make end-of-life decisions, and inherit each other's property.
As expected, LGBT groups and elected officials have sued Tennessee in state court over a new law that was specifically written to prohibit cities or counties from enacting laws or policies that protect LGBT people from discrimination. The law says, No local government shall by ordinance, resolution, or any other means impose on or make applicable to any person an anti-discrimination practice, standard, definition, or provision that shall deviate from, modify, supplement, add to, change, or vary in any manner from state law. The statute targeted a Nashville ordinance that prohibited metropolitan government contractors from discriminating on the basis of sexual orientation or gender identity through their employment practices. The lawsuit charges that the state law embodies an animus toward gay and transgender people so strong that the Tennessee legislature was willing to repeal policies protecting students against bullying and harassment and to make other groups suffer as well, merely to prevent gay and transgender citizens from obtaining needed protections. The lawsuit says the state law violates equal protection guarantees of the U.S. and Tennessee constitutions.
Elsewhere, LGBT people and their allies paraded with pride in three Eastern European capitals on June 18th, but each march required police protection. About 1,000 people participated in the fourth Pride rally in the Bulgarian capital of Sofia, while twice that number paraded through the Croatian capital of Zagreb, and police in riot gear flanked equality marchers in Hungary's capital of Budapest. Media reports describe the parade participants who marched peacefully through downtown Sofia as mostly younger people. They carried colorful banners calling for love, equality, and sexual diversity. "We are here because we exist," read one banner. "Be aware of whom you hate," read another, "because it could be someone you love." City officials in Sofia rejected the application of an anti-gay group to hold a parallel rally because of violence by extremists at previous LGBT marches. Zagreb authorities said that about 2,000 people, including a few prominent public officials, paraded through the central city under the theme of "The Future is Ours." They were protected by more than 700 police officers. 17 protesters were detained for attempting to disrupt the march. The Zagreb parade came a week after thousands of right-wing extremists forced a similar pride march in the coastal Croatian city of Split to end prematurely when they assaulted the participants with rocks, bottles, tear gas canisters, and other objects. Dozens were injured, and there were over 100 arrests. And in late-breaking reports on June 25th from St. Petersburg, Russia, activists there are reporting arrests and at least one beating by police after again attempting to peacefully demonstrate for LGBT human rights.
But there were peaceful parades in two Mexican cities. LGBT people staged their fifth Pride March on June 11th in Ensenada, a port city located 90 miles south of San Diego, California. A contingent of lesbian and gay parents marched with their kids, but activists were unhappy that only one local club, Poker Face Baja Sport Bar, participated in the parade with a float. And about 1,000 people joined in the 16th Pride Parade in nearby Tijuana on June 18th. Many rode on the beds of semi-trucks blasting Mexican and American dance tunes. Drag queens performed on an open-air stage following what gay journalist Rex Wachner described as a rowdy and colorful procession.
In other news, the World Health Organization urged governments this week to eliminate laws criminalizing sex between consenting adult men. The UN Health Agency said that men who have sex with men in the estimated 76 countries where it's outlawed are among the hardest hit by the HIV epidemic. The WHO said that many gay and bisexual men in those countries, where up to 40% may be HIV positive, fear going to clinics because they risk being turned away, publicly identified, or even beaten and killed. Last week, the UN Human Rights Council for the first time condemned discrimination against gay, lesbian, and transgender people around the world, which a spokeswoman for the UN AIDS Prevention Agency this week called a major breakthrough in furthering the fight against AIDS.
Amnesty International issued a call this week to the newly elected parliament in Turkey to protect the lives and rights of sexual minorities. The global human rights group pointed to so-called honor killings by family members who cannot accept a gay, lesbian, or transgender relative, violence against transgender people who often resort to sex work for basic survival perpetrated by their clients and by police officials, harassment of gays in military service, which is compulsory for Turkish men, and attempts by municipalities to shut down local LGBT advocacy organizations. Andrew Gardner, Amnesty International's researcher on Turkey, charged in a press release that homophobic statements by government officials have encouraged discrimination against individuals. Rather than repeat past failures, he said, the new government must respect and protect their rights through words and actions. The group called for the enactment of anti-bias legislation and asked lawmakers to show the political will to combat discrimination by demonstrating that homophobic public discourse is unacceptable.
And finally, A lawyer and a college professor from the United States have tied the knot in what's been described as the first public lesbian wedding in Nepal. Courtney Mitchell and Sarah Welton from Denver, Colorado, were united this week in a Hindu-Nepalese tradition at the Dakshin Kali Temple south of Kathmandu, the capital of the Himalayan nation. Local rights activists and supporters, along with some of the couple's close friends, cheered the ceremony. Their union will not be legally recognized, however, but the country's highest court has ruled that sexual orientation-based discrimination violates Nepal's constitution. So most activists believe that marriage equality there is just a matter of time. The 41-year-old Mitchell had lived in Nepal previously and said she and her 48-year-old partner wanted to visibly support that country's LGBT community. A Hindu priest performed the ceremony in which Mitchell put red vermilion powder on Welton's forehead, a practice similar to exchanging rings. "It was my dream wedding come true," Welton said, calling it a fabulous ceremony.
That's News Wrap for the week ending June 25th, 2011. Follow the news in your area and around the world. An informed community is a strong community.
News Wrap was written by Greg Gordon, recorded at the studios of KPFK Los Angeles, and produced by Steve Pride. Read the text of this week's News Wrap online at thiswayout.org. For This Way Out, I'm Rick Watts.
And I'm Chris Wilson.
And I'm Maria, and together we're Zrazy. And we're crazy about This Way Out, the international lesbian and gay radio magazine.
From Greenwich Village to Niagara Falls, the good news for same-gender couples is out after a week of legislative nail-biting. This Way Out's Lucia Chappelle reports on a historic victory.
Almost 42 years to the day after the Stonewall Rebellion, New Yorkers got to spend Pride weekend celebrating the legalization of same-gender marriage in the state. The state assembly had passed the bill on June 15th, and the wrangling for the GOP-controlled Senate began. Ultimately, four Republicans would join all but one Democrat in the 33-29 majority. While the debate, negotiations, and intrigue raged in public and behind the scenes, the hall in the Capitol in Albany were jammed with demonstrators on both sides of the issue. As fate would have it, President Barack Obama's first fundraiser specifically for LGBT donors had long been planned for Manhattan on June 23rd. Protesters outside and inside the event urged Obama to complete his oft-reported evolving on the subject. However, the president skirted around updating his position at all.
"Ever since I entered into public life, ever since I have a memory about what my mother taught me and my grandparents taught me, I believe that discriminating against people was wrong. I have no choice. I was born that way. In Hawaii, I believe that gay couples deserve the same legal rights as every other couple in this country. That's why I ordered federal agencies to extend the same benefits to gay couples that go to straight couples, wherever possible. That's why we're going to keep fighting until the law no longer..." I heard you guys. Believe it or not, I anticipated that somebody might ask. Where was I? "That's why I have long believed that the so-called Defense of Marriage Act ought to be repealed. It was wrong. It was unfair. And that's why we decided with my Attorney General that we could no longer defend the constitutionality of DOMA in the courts. Now, part of the reason that DOMA doesn't make sense is that traditionally marriage has been decided by the states. And right now, I understand there's a little debate going on here in New York about whether to join five other states and D.C. in allowing civil marriage for gay couples. And I want to say that under the leadership of Governor Cuomo, with the support of Democrats and Republicans, New York is doing exactly what democracies are supposed to do. There's a debate, there's deliberation about what it means here in New York to treat people fairly in the eyes of the law.
After Obama's ringing non-endorsement, the spotlight shifted back to Albany. With amendments all done and time running out, the senators were given a final opportunity to speak before voting. Senator Ruben Diaz was the only Democrat to oppose the bill.
God, not Albany, has settled the definition of marriage a long time ago. I'm only one here, but that's okay. I am probably voting no.
Openly gay Democrat Tom Duane put a human face on the politics.
You know, I want to thank Governor Cuomo. And I want to thank the activists and the straight supporters. And most of all, I want to thank my family. And I want to thank Lewis. You know, he was there when my brother died. My mother and my father. I was there when his brother died, when his mother and father died, and I loved his parents. My whole family loves Lewis, and I love Lewis's family. And our nieces and nephews know us only as a couple. And we are like married to them, but of course we're not yet. But the exact same love, the same commitment. Look, I respect you. I know you respect me, but marriage says that we are a family. Lewis and I are a family, and marriage strengthens all families. It's going to strengthen my family and all New York families. It provides security and peace of mind. And like you, Lewis and I, in sickness and in health, marriage recognizes that love and commitment. You know, it's paradoxical, you know, because my life and, you know, the lives of other New Yorkers, our lives aren't going to really change very much.
I don't know.
Nothing is going to change about how we are, how we take care of each other and love each other, except for it will change. And I know this is a tough vote, Mr. President. I know this is a tough vote. And there are only heroes in this chamber today. There are no villains here. There are only heroes on both sides of the aisle and in both houses of this legislature. Only heroes.
Senator Duane, can I just bring it to a close and recognize your vote as an affirmative?
Yes, Mr. President. I'm asking my colleagues. I am asking my colleagues to please vote yes for all New Yorkers. And for me and Lewis.
Republican Mark Brasanti's conversion story provided a powerful model for others who are still evolving.
As a Catholic, I was raised to believe that marriage is between a man and a woman. I'm not here, however, as a senator who was just Catholic. I'm also here with a background as an attorney through which I look at things and I apply reason. I know that with this decision, many people who voted for me will question my integrity a short time ago. I'll tell you, though, that I have studied this issue. For those that know me, they know that I have struggled with it. To those whose support I may lose, please know that in the past, what I was telling you and what I believed at that time was a truth. But by doing the research and ultimately doing what I believe to be the right thing, to me, shows integrity. I would not respect myself if I didn't do the research, have an open mind, and make a decision, an informed decision, based on the information before me. I cannot legally come up with an argument against same-sex marriage. Who am I to say that someone does not have the same rights that I have with my wife, who I love, or they have the 1,300-plus rights that I share with her? But there's another important point here that this bill brings up, and that's its religious protections. Under this bill, the religious aspects and belief are protected as well as for not-for-profits. There's no mandate that the Catholic Church or any other religious organization perform ceremonies or rent halls. It protects benevolent organizations such as the Knights of Columbus and many others. And as a lawyer, I feel confident that the religious organizations and the others are protected. We in this state have recognized same-sex couples who are married in other states and are now in New York. I have read studies about civil unions that show that they do not work and causes chaos. I believe this state needs to provide equal rights and protection to all of its residents. I struggled with the word marriage as between a man and a woman. That's how I am raised. But I also struggle with the rights that are lacking for same-sex couples, and I've stated this numerous times. I'm not going to get into the philosophical arguments because I've heard them all. But for me, the issue boils down to this. I've done the research, and my belief that a person can be wiser today than yesterday. I apologize to those who feel offended, to those I have hurt with the votes that I had 6 months ago, but I believe you can be wiser today than yesterday when you do the work. I cannot deny a person, a human being, a taxpayer, a worker, or people in my district and across this state, the state of New York, and those people who make this the great state it is, the same rights that I have with my wife. I vote in the affirmative, Mr. President.
The Secretary will announce the results.
Ayes 33, nays 29.
Governor Andrew Cuomo had made passage of the bill one of his top 2011 priorities. Cuomo spoke shortly after the vote.
This state, when it is at its finest, is a beacon for social justice. The legacy of this state was that we were the progressive capital of the nation. And when you look back at so many of the great progressive movements that were birthed here in New York, the women's rights movement was birthed here in New York, the environmental rights movement was birthed here in New York, Storm King on the Hudson, the workers' rights movement was birthed here in New York after the Triangle Shirtwaist Factory fire, all these great progressive movements, the gay rights movement was birthed at Stonewall. And what this state said today brings this discussion of marriage equality to a new plane. That's the power and the beauty of New York. The other states look to New York for the progressive direction. And what we said today is you look to New York once again. Because New York made a powerful statement, not just for the people of New York, but the people all across this nation. We reached a new level of social justice this evening. Marriage equality. I said to the legislators, you look at the first word, marriage. It's really about the second word, equality. It's really about New Yorkers, our brothers and sisters, looking at us and saying, we want equality. We want equality in society, equality in our relationships, equality in our love, equality in our families. We want full recognition. Marriage equality. And we did it today. And that legislature worked together, and they responded to their better angels. They responded to their hopes, not their fears. And I thank the advocacy community that came together from all across the nation and worked as one, and they were sophisticated, and they were smart, and they were constructive in their effort, and it was my pleasure to work with them. I'm always proud to be a New Yorker, but tonight I am especially proud to be a New Yorker.
Governor Cuomo signed the marriage equality bill into law at 11:55 p.m. on June 24th, so it will go into effect on July 24th. Despite the landmark victory, the honeymoon was short-lived at the Eagle in Chelsea. Pride weekend patrons at the Levi's and Leather Bar had just started celebrating the news when they found themselves embroiled in what seemed much like an old-fashioned raid. A multi-agency team conducted a surprise inspection, questioning customers and issuing citations for unlicensed security, unnecessary noise, and other minor infractions. Manhattan Borough President Scott Stringer said he would be asking the police commissioner to conduct a formal investigation. So, happy Stonewall anniversary, New York. You've come a long way, but you still have a ways to go. Reporting for This Way Out, I'm Lucia Chappell.
Poet Jonathan Ryan Lee passed away on June 1st. He held a Master's of Fine Art from Northern Illinois University and was the author of several books, including poetry, novels, and a study of long-term gay relationships. This Way Out was privileged to broadcast Jonathan reading a poem of his last December. His surviving partner of 33 years, Roy Lee, requested that we air it again in his memory near the 4th of July, his favorite holiday.
Hello, my name is Jonathan Ryan Lee. I live in the Jemez Mountains in New Mexico. I was writing a series of gay poems a few years ago, wanting to come up with some strong words that would hopefully demonstrate to people how it is to be homosexual in this society. In this poem, I enlisted William Shakespeare to help make my point. Any other name. I've been called queer, sissy, fruit, fairy, faggot, pansy, homo, pussy, Susie, Nelly, bugger, powder puff, one of those, light on his feet, limp-wristed, mama's boy, child molester, flaming queen, butt boy, fudge packer. But a rose by any other name would smell as sweet.
That was Any Other Name from a collection of poems by Jonathan Ryan Lee called Rhyme Free Verse Haiku. Under his pen name of Holland Cedric Payton, Jonathan is also the author of Till Death Do Us Part, a look inside long-term gay relationships. Each book is available at Amazon.com. Thanks for tuning into This Way Out, the International Lesbian and Gay Radio Magazine. This week, Rick Watts, Chris Wilson, Lucia Chappell, and the late Jonathan Ryan Lee contributed program material. Thanks also to Steve Pride and to Elaine Baumgartel, Glenn Thamert, and Roy Lee. Kim Wilson composed and performed our theme music. This Way Out is made possible by a grant from the Kicking Assets Fund of the Tides Foundation and the generosity of our listeners. Thank you. Log on to thiswayout.org to find out how you can participate and to link up with our podcasts, our blog, and our Facebook fan page. Did you know you can also hear This Way Out on iTunes? Follow TWO Radio on Twitter, email TWORadio@AOL.com, or write to us at P.O. Box 38327, Los Angeles, California, 90038, USA. For Associate Producer Lucia Chappell and all of us at This Way Out, I'm Greg Gordon. We thank you for listening on WLUW Chicago, Illinois, 2XX Canberra, Australian Capital Territory, KUGS Bellingham, Washington, and more than 200 other stations around the world, including this community radio station, and we're all going to stay tuned. Behind me.
house, high above the chimney top, that's where you find me, oh, somewhere.
Listeners often ask for ways to find organizations in the community that support independent radio. They want to give back to establishments and businesses that contribute to the life and livelihood of Houston's cultural scene. KPFT hears you, and we now provide a way to connect. KPFT has launched a community directory at kpft.org. At kpft.org's community directory, you can find restaurants, services, and more serving your Houston area.
We actually got a lot of great results from KPFT, from their online directory and also their online ad space. It's actually paid for itself a couple times over just in the first month.
If you want your business to be listed in the community directory, it's affordable and easy. Contact Tony Cox at 713-526-4000 or email cox@kpft.org to learn more.
This Way Out is heard every week as part of Queer Voices. You are listening to 90.1 FM KPFT. At 90.1 FM, this is KPFT Houston. Now, more of Queer Voices with Jack Belinsky and the entire Queer Voices crew.
Well, Buena Vista is totally gay. It's about looking for sex and having sex in Buena Vista Park. I don't know that you can get gayer than that. And it's just so evocative of San Francisco in the 70s.
There's a chill in my bedroom, the storm in the park. What with these guys in their Levi's just out for a lark. I know I missed my dinner. I know you know that I've been in Buena Vista, striking matches in the wind. Well, it's a series of signals, innuendos, and keys, and it's a lovely combination of romance and sleaze. And I can always take those scratches with a silly kind of grin in Buena Vista, striking matches in the wind. Go passing any judgment, don't go cutting down the trees. Sonny, I've seen you from my window, brushing the dirt from your knees. I'm in control of where I'm going, it could end or begin in Buena Vista, striking matches in the wind. In Buena Vista, striking matches in the wind. So there.
That was Stephen Grossman singing Buena Vista, recorded in 1991, and it starts off a very special edition of Queer Music Heritage. This is J.D. Doyle, and I've been waiting to do this show for years. The show is about the release of a CD of material recorded by Stephen Grossman in early May of 1991, about 6 weeks before his death on June 23rd. Grossman is one of my gay music heroes, and here's one of the reasons why. Not only was he one of the earliest artists to record lyrically gay material, but he was the first to have an album released on a major label. The label was Mercury, and the album was called Caravan Tonight, released in April of 1974. By the way, parts 2 and 3 of this show are devoted entirely to that first album, and will include some special interviews. To put things in perspective, it was only the year before Grossman's album that the first privately released lesbian album came out by Alex Dobkin, and Olivia Records started their long run of releases also in 1974. So an openly gay album on a major label was a big deal. Now, unfortunately, it did not open any floodgates, as it apparently did not sell as the label had hoped. So another release was not done. But it gave hope and an example to other gay and lesbian artists and to their fans. It was a bit of gay visibility long overdue. Before we get into more music from the new album, I want to share perhaps the most known song from the 1974 Caravan Tonight album, and it's my favorite. The song is called Out, and the version I'm sharing is a live one from a radio concert from 1975. So even if you know his work, it's likely you've never heard it done live. Stephen Grossman and Out.
Mama, dear mama, I have something important to say. Yes, I know you didn't plan on me turning out this way. Well, you didn't fail me, Mom. I don't love you any less, 'cause for me it's just a matter of what suits me best. Well, I know it's hard for you to take, and it's nothing you would brag when your firstborn turns out to be a. Now, Papa, Papa, did I spoil your dreams? I know you wanted to see me marching in the Marines. Ah, but that won't prove my manhood, as it didn't prove yours. 'Cause I went to talk to that landlord while you stood behind the door. Well, I hear you calling me crazy, but I think it's out of fear, 'cause you're not so sure that you aren't. Now, brother, hey, little brother, tell me what you're gonna do if everything that has happened to me someday happens to you. We try to grin and bear it, or you hate yourself inside, but will you walk with me in the sunshine? Said I feel that the sun's gonna shine, and we won't have to hide, for there are all kinds of people who happen to be this way, and there's really nothing wrong with being all the way it used to, yeah. Nothing wrong with being, I tell you it's okay. Nothing wrong with being gay.
That track was from a radio show called Fruit Punch, hosted by Steve O'Neill on KPFA in Berkeley, and it is courtesy of the GLBT Historical Society in San Francisco, and is the first of three live tracks you'll hear during this hour. When no follow-up to the Caravan Tonight album happened, Stephen Grossman did continue writing, though not prolifically. And he performed often in San Francisco, where he lived in those years, and that included several radio performances. Stephen's life was cut short by AIDS, and it was only through the efforts of his close friends that recordings of a number of his unreleased songs were done. And this is that story. The album, released 20 years after his death, is called Something in the Moonlight, and the opening song, Buena Vista, was actually the only song to be released earlier. It appeared on a 1998 various artist compilation called Fruit Cocktail, and you heard the voice of Richard Jaworkin introing it at the start of the show. Richard will tell much of this story, but I don't want to get too far without sharing with you more music from the new Grossman CD. So here's an early song written by Stephen when he still lived in New York City, about missing a boyfriend named Chris, who had moved to San Francisco. Here's the song, California Now.
I've been going out nightly, doesn't much matter where. I get home every day or so to water my plants and check the mail. Go out for the evening paper, watch the children at the candy store. Pass the grocery and the fruit stand. I don't shop much anymore. It seems we came to a decision, but I swear I don't remember how. No, it's selfish to ask, but must you be in California now? Must you be? California now. We call it a vacation. I needed time to be alone. I said I'd come to live with you in half a year, when all my work here was done. My producers bought me this piano. My writing, well, it's coming along. But for the sad preoccupation that finds its way into every song, it seems we came to an agreement, but I swear I don't remember how. I know it's crazy to ask, but must you be in California now? Must you be in California now? There are others who dream. You know your name. I don't suspect you'll be lonely, that I could see you before our time. I go with men from the bar who ask me for my company, but there just isn't that connection. You'd call me blood. You would call me blood. I'd call you family. It seems we came to a decision, but I swear I don't remember how. Yet I believe we'll be together, even though you're in California now. I believe in California now.
Richard Dworkin was assistant producer on the new Stephen Grossman album, and I'm pleased to say that I've known him for a number of years. He's an active session drummer and was a member of the jazz ensemble Microscopic Septet and played on a number of albums in my collection, including those of Doug Stevens and the Outband, David Clement, Blackberry, and he played on and produced the albums of another hero of mine, Michael Callen, both as a solo artist and with the Flirtations. And Richard was also in the popular San Francisco very gay band, Buena Vista. But this interview's focus was on Stephen Grossman, so I started by asking how they met.
While I was working with Buena Vista and after I worked with Buena Vista, I worked briefly with Stephen Grossman. I met Stephen shortly after he moved to San Francisco in about 1975. Would run into him socially. Eventually, we came to play a few gigs together. Stephen wasn't performing very much by then, and I was always encouraging him to do so and encouraging him to write more songs and record more. I remember playing with him at a place called The City in San Francisco, which was in fact a disco. It was the place where Buena Vista was filmed for the movie Word Is Out, actually. Actually, Stephen was my last roommate in San Francisco. He was looking for a place to live, and I had a spare room in my flat in the Castro, and Stephen moved into that room.
How long did you room together?
A year or two, and then I moved to New York.
So you were probably pretty involved with his music.
To the extent that he was making music, which was not a large extent, I was very involved with it, yes. Stephen was not a prolific songwriter. As far as I know, there's less than 36 tunes of his that exist. But basically, Stephen sort of gave up on music. Yeah, he sort of gave up on it. It was after the Mercury album, and he had toured with that, and he had moved to San Francisco. And he'd come back to New York in 1976 to meet again with his producers to talk about making a new album. And basically, the impression I got was they said, well, it's sort of too gay, and that's not going to fly now. Which is sort of ironic considering that they his producer signed him on the basis that he was gay. But in the commercial atmosphere of music in 1976... they felt that he shouldn't be so explicit. Stephen wrote about this in his song, The Last Pioneers, about that trip to New York.
So didn't he write much after that?
I don't think he wrote much after that. He didn't perform much after that. Yeah, I don't know if he had 24 public performances the rest of his life.
And they solicited him as a gay artist?
Correct.
Do you remember the time leading up to that with him?
Oh, on the Mercury record. I didn't know him then. Stephen's album, Caravan Tonight, was released in 1974. We can talk about that to the extent that I know about it if you want.
Yeah.
Here's how Stephen came to make Caravan Tonight, as far as I know and recall, is that he read a classified ad in the Village Voice that was soliciting a gay singer-songwriter to make a record. And it said, tapes only. And he didn't have a tape. Stephen was pretty young then. I think he was 22, 23 years old. But he called the number and he said, look, I don't have a tape, but give me 5 minutes. Just give me 5 minutes. And he said he heard the guy saying, hold on, and conferring with somebody else. And they said, okay, you know, be at such and such a place at such and such a time. And he went and auditioned, and he got the gig. This was in New York City. Stephen was born and raised in Brooklyn, New York.
How did you come to get the material for the new CD?
What happened was, well, I should back up and preface that by saying Stephen had the good fortune to go to high school in Brooklyn with Judith Castleberry and Jacques Dupre of the musical group Castleberry and Dupre, and they were his lifelong friends.
And it was Judith Castleberry who encouraged Stephen to record more of his songs in the early 90s. Stephen was ill with AIDS. He had Kaposi sarcoma. And Judith encouraged him to come to New York and do some recording with me and with some other people. And Stephen came here, and we had some meetings about the project. And Stephen had what turned out to be his last birthday party, at which he performed. The last time I saw Stephen was on 13th Street near the Gay Community Center here in New York, and it was the fall, and he said, "It's just too cold, I have to go home." Sort of implicit in that was the idea that we would never make this recording. However, Judith Castleberry came to his house one day and said, "Stephen, we're going to the recording studio." I mean, he was very, very sick. He was not even dressing and going outside, as I understand. And so he said, "Totally impossible, couldn't possibly, I'm too sick, no way, I'm not getting dressed." She said, "Yes, get your clothes on, we are going." And I think she's probably the only person who could get away with that and whom he would obey in that situation, or trust enough to go with. And so he went with her to a recording studio, and they recorded with guitar accompaniment an album's worth of material. It was about a month or two before he died in June of 1991. I believe he was 39, so it would have been 91.
And what happened to the tapes after that?
Well, in 1993, we worked on it a lot. There was some money to work on it, and Judith was the producer of this project, and I was sort of the concert master in terms of finding musicians to play on it, in some cases arrangers. So we did a lot of work on it in terms of putting backup tracks on it in 1993. But the money ran out, and Judith moved on to other things in her life. And I got very busy doing Michael Callan's Legacy album. And it sort of sat there for a long time, until recently, when we scared up a little money to finish it.
And what's the name of the project?
Stephen's new album, Something in the Moonlight.
Is that one of the songs?
It is indeed one of the songs. It's one of the last, or perhaps the last song that Stephen wrote. It's sort of pondering the possibility of an afterlife, which I'm sure Stephen was pondering at that point in his life. Something in the Moonlight.
Not that you're here, though I know you're away. Why do you take up my time? Have you come to stay? We don't talk like we used to. In fact, you never say a word, but crawling inside me, climbing up the stairs. They try to tell me you couldn't be there, but it's the same preoccupation I think of you the most. When they ask me, I ask them, do you believe in ghosts? Something's in the moonlight, just outside the door, parachuting silently, coming to haunt me some more. Something in the moonlight, could it be a rebellious star? Come to earth to tell me of a home afar.
everyone to be. What do you do with your damn eternity? Live thoughtless in limbo. Are you screaming to return? I wonder. Do you have feelings and do you have form? Have you transcended right and wrong? Does it matter how it happens in a warm overdose? When they ask us, can we tell them we want to be a ghost? Some days in the moonlight, just outside the door, parachuting silently, coming to haunt me some more. Some things in the moonlight, could it be a rebellious star? Come to earth to tell me of a home afar. Will I recognize you? How much more can you see? When I make up my mind, will you come and get me? Will I truly be ready? Will it happen too soon? Will I be completely reconciled, or have to pay for what I've done? Perceive it as judgment or celestial fun to spend forever in the light? I tell them I believe in ghosts. Some things in the moonlight, just outside the door, parachuting silently, coming to haunt me some more.
Talk about some of the other songs on the album.
Well, my favorite two cuts on the album are my favorite Stephen Grossman songs, Post Caravan Tonight, which are A Greasy Griddle and A Short Order Cook, or Greasy Griddle, as I've been calling it for 25 years, and the song Buena Vista, which actually has already appeared on Mitch Gallup's Fruit Cocktail compilation. Greasy Griddle, I had always envisioned as sort of a big band arrangement. One of the things we had to consider in producing this record, which I think Judith Castleberry did a really good job of working with, is the nature of Stephen's vocal performances, which are, well, first there's his register, which is sort of low, for certainly for a pop singer of this era. And they're sort of subdued, you know. He didn't have a lot of energy at that point in his life. Not that they're lacking energy, but they're just not, they're not like shout-outs or anything, you know. He was projecting enough, but it's not the kind of thing that you could put a big band behind and have the big band not overwhelm it. So what we came up with was an a cappella arrangement. I paired Stephen with one of my favorite a cappella groups, the Bobs, who originated in San Francisco. So that seemed sort of appropriate as well. And so that's what you'll hear, is Stephen singing in front of the Bobs. on the song Greasy Griddle, A Greasy Griddle and a Short Order Cook, which is about sort of flirting with a guy, with a short order cook. And I always envisaged that occurring in a place called Andy's Donuts, which was a late night hangout on Castro Street in the 70s.
In a Castro cafe, after hours, craving burgers, buns, and fries, I was reaching for hot sauce and salt on the counter when the slip of the neck caught my eye. There was a crazy reception, it started the attraction, the sunny side over that got me to look. I couldn't ask for a better sight. On a long and echo Monday night, a greasy griddle, a short order cook. A greasy griddle and a short order cook. You got a hell of a lot of work, but be a hell of a lot of cooking tonight. Tonight. You got a hell of a lot of work, but be a hell of a lot of cooking tonight. Waiters in sneakers chasing the air, carrying water, checks and change. I was trying to stay steady, but my feet began to swivel to the sound of something sizzling on the range. It wasn't a fishy fry that got me sighing, but a voice so cheery that everything shook. A Broadway evening couldn't be finer than the show that was playing at the diner. A greasy griddle, a short order cook. Boy, a greasy griddle and a short order cook. You got a hell of a lot of work, will be a hell of a lot of cooking tonight. Tonight. You got a hell of a lot of work, will be a hell of a lot of cooking tonight.
Now how about another cup of coffee?
No, no.
Another piece of pie?
No, whoa, there's only one thing I'm wanting to go. Well, it's a quarter to four and I ought to be at home, covered up and cozy with some cuddly guy. If the temperature dips before then, when it's time to go, I'm gonna look for that neon sign in the sky where the muffins are puffing and the kitchen is hopping. I will never again settle for a rocker and book. The equator couldn't be much hotter than the time I will make when I've got a greasy griddle, a short order cook. Boy, a greasy griddle and a short order cook. Boy, a greasy griddle and a short order cook. Boy,
a greasy griddle.
And I'm do you a short order cook. Hey, yeah.
Can you please talk about the song Winter Story?
Well, Winter Story is a song about Stephen missing Austin. And Austin is the boyfriend Stephen wrote about in the title tune from his album, Caravan Tonight. The first line, of course, of the first song on Stephen's record is, Austin, you've got that gypsy in your eye.
There's a storm in the making, my windows are shaking. Newspapers swirl in the sky, oh, the radio this morning gave overcast warnings. I was never good at taking goodbyes, joined plans. My friend, we had no way to know if a summer's worth of kisses in the sand could build us a castle in the snow. It's a winter story, the jealousy, the glory, camphor, the soul, the season to hold it. Of life, flowing water to ice, the muffler and the sneeze and a damp
ominous breeze. I was never good at taking goodbyes. Do you remember how we were together last? My friend, there's no way I know that the flower of a seed miscast can carry its own through the snow. It's so winter a story, the trickery, the glory, credit at the store and blankets for the poor. It's a chilling of blood, cleansing water to mud, the tinsel and the star, and an ominous wind from afar. It's a winter story, the jealousy, the fury, fire in the trash and flurries on the lash. It's a coming of frost and I'm missing you, Austin. You're quiet and you're strong, your body so willing and warm, willing and warm. I was never good at taking, never, never good at taking. I was never good at taking goodbyes.
You heard Richard talk about Stephen's boyfriend at that time, Austin. And here's something you may not expect. I've got some comments from that very same person. He's Austin Noto, and while they were not a couple long, they remained friends until Stephen's death. Before those interview comments, though, I think I'll first let you hear the song that talks about Austin, the title track from Caravan Tonight. But instead of the album version, here's a live track from a radio performance, complete with Stephen introducing it.
Thank you kindly. I was raised in New York, and California was always a place for me where I would come for refuge whenever I was freaking out, or whenever I just smashed up with somebody, or whatever. I'd get on, find the easiest transportation I could, and just get out here as quick as I can. And the first time I was here, this song came about 2 days after I got here on the piano, which I don't play too well. But suddenly it just happened. It's called Caravan Tonight.
Austin, you got that gypsy in your eye. We have 4 good months behind us. Now you think I'm too possessive, though your head is on my knee. Your mind is just outside of town. Your ears are ringing for that carefree tambourine. There's a caravan tonight. It will be passing by our window. We have many years before us. Last night while you were sleeping, I put patches on your pants. And I watched you in your dreams, and I waited for the sun to bring you home, to bring you home, to bring you home. Now if the freedom your heart embraces is nothing but a vision in the sand, you know I'll be waiting here. I'll be your oasis, be your promise, your promised land. Austin, you got that fever in your head. You say security confines you. My laughter weighs you down. You know the fault is in our years. There's no difference in desire. Here I used to wander with my father's violin. There's a caravan tonight. It approaches in the market. There's a rushing of flounces and rhythm swinging feet. There's a boy in scarlet sashes, and he's calling out the names of the lovers that he left here once before, once before, once before. Now if the freedom your heart embraces is nothing but a vision in the sand, you know I've been waiting here. I'll be your oasis, I'll be your promise, your promised land, your promised land, your promised land. Austin, you got that gypsy rack. There's a boy outside that window with the moon upon his shoulders, though your kisses on my lips, your senses rich beyond control, your heart it's racing with this crazy castanets. There's a caravan tonight, I can hear it in the distance. You had many years before you. Last night while you were sleeping, I put patches on your pants and watched you in your dreams, and I waited for the sun to bring you home.
That was another track from the radio show Fruit Punch from August of 1975 and courtesy of the GLBT Historical Society in San Francisco. And I thank Austin Noto for these comments about Stephen.
The song Caravan Tonight was directed to you, starting with the lyrics, Austin, you've got that gypsy in your eye. Can you tell me about the inspiration for that song?
Well, the best I could put it as is that I was 17 years old and very young and naive and not really knowing if, you know, the first person I met was the one I was going to spend the rest of my life with.
And were you a couple or boyfriends or what?
Yes. We were a couple. And as the song says, for 4 months. Because he says in the song, we have 4 good months behind us.
Did you know about the song before it appeared on the album?
He told me when he was recording it, and I actually went to the studio while they were recording the album and got to watch them making it. It's funny because when he wrote a song to me when we first got together, and I asked him to take my name out of it because I was basically 17 and still in the closet. And I guess once we broke up, he felt all bets were off. And I'm actually glad he did, you know, use my name.
Can you talk a little bit about Stephen as a person?
He's probably one of the smartest people I've ever met. He was, I don't know, just always trying to do the right thing and had a great sense of humor, very funny. And I was honored to have known him.
I've gotten the impression he was kind of a, if you will, a quiet performer. Kind of mellow and soft-spoken and...
Yes, you're right. He just had the ability to make people cry. He just actually, you know, knew how to get to those places that get people right to the core.
Did you happen to be around when the album came out to know his reaction to how it was received and so forth?
Yeah, he played lots of places. I think he was hoping it would have sold better, but, you know, he had the opportunity to come back and make more music, but his producers wanted him to change all the nouns to make the whole thing heterosexual. And he said no, and they said, well, then we're not doing it. So that's actually why he only recorded one album.
The album got pretty good promotion at first. I found large ads for it in magazines.
Mm-hmm.
But it doesn't look like Mercury followed up on it much.
No, I think once they saw that the sales weren't what they thought it was going to be, they just decided to cut their losses. That's my guess.
I think the market at that time, maybe Mercury was thinking they would tap into the glam market.
Exactly. Yeah, and that couldn't be further from, you know, he was more like a gay Cat Stevens rather than a gay...
David Bowie.
Right.
Did you know that Twiggy recorded Caravan Tonight?
Yes, I did, and actually Stephen loved it because he said he really didn't like her version, but he did enjoy the royalty checks. Yeah, we got a big laugh. I actually have it on my iPod.
Is there anything else I should ask you about Stephen, or anything else, comments you want to make?
Like I said, it was definitely an honor to know him, and I'm very glad I did, and he just meant more than you could ever know to me. Thank you again for all you've done for Stephen.
I'm glad to spread the word.
And you hear that music in the background? I thought this would be a good time to slip in just a bit of the version of the song Caravan Tonight you heard Austin Noto and I just talk about. It's done by 70s supermodel Twiggy. It's from her self-titled debut album from 1976. I've got another special treat from that same 1975 concert, including the live version you heard of the song Caravan Tonight, was an unreleased song. And as it's not on the new album, it's still unreleased. And I'm delighted to be likely the only person to play the song on the radio in the last 36 years. I am again grateful to my source for this and am including their intro to Stephen Grossman and the song Siamese Twins.
The following historic audio is brought to you by the GLBT Historical Society. Join us today and help open our new museum in San Francisco's Castro District. To find out more, visit our webpage at glbthistory.org.
There's this real popular syndrome that I see going around. It's probably been going around a long time. And how best can I explain it? It has to do a lot with just feeling yourself incomplete, feeling you're only half until you find Mr. or Ms. or whatever, everything, you know? And then when you find that person, you become one and all that, and isolate yourself from everybody else, and it just progresses into sometimes madness. And this song is about kind of some of those symptoms that you'll find in an ailing relationship. I call it Siamese twins.
Coupledom is fine. If you remember who you are. But I'm afraid this kind of marriage, my friend, might be taking it a bit too far. We ride the D train in the morning, swinging on the same strap. You wear my pants and my sneakers, the shirt off my back. Sometimes you can't even tell where your body ends and my touch begins. I swear we should have been born as Siamese twins. They tell me exercise some freedom, get out and do something on your own. But I feel guilty if I leave you by yourself, and oh, so worried if I'm the first one home. Now I go to hope in a letter, I say both of our names. We share all of the credit, but take all of the blame. We play confession Sunday mornings, we repent the same sin. I swear we should have been born as Siamese twins. And so it seems we are ever searching for that liberated household in the sky. We talk menages and praising and consciousness raising, but we seldom go and give it a try. I
I play the chords with my left hand and you strum with the right. We have repetitious arguments, identical gripes. Now with a local anesthetic and a small piece of skin, well, we could really tie the knot like Siamese twins. We could really tie the knot like Siamese twins.
Here's a very special surprise. The GLBT Historical Society has also provided me with a video of that concert, with Stephen singing five songs. You'll find a link to that from my website, where I've got an extensive Stephen Grossman tribute section. This is J.D. Doyle, and again, I'm very pleased to be honoring the music of Stephen Grossman on Queer Music Heritage this month. Part two of the show will include an interview with Judith Castleberry, Stephen's good friend and the executive producer of the new CD. And there's more. Part two will also include Stephen singing three songs from another live radio performance from 1976. I want to close with my favorite song from the new album, and it really captures the spirit of why I love his music. In his history, it was when Stephen met again with his producers at Mercury Records to discuss a follow-up album. He was essentially told, not unless he dropped the gay stuff, to which he would not agree. I'm going back to Richard Dworkin to let him introduce the song, Last Pioneers.
Oh, Last Pioneers. Well, that's a song about Stephen coming to New York in 1976 when bicentennial celebrations were happening in New York, sort of juxtaposing a bird's eye view of New York Harbor and the Statue of Liberty against an image of, what does Stephen say, from the brothers who can't disguise it even in men's clothing and the sisters who just do not pass, comes the spirit of my people, courage over fear, the last pioneers.
You can show what I watch on the TV, what I dance to at the bar. You get your hands into everything, try to get me to look like what you are. Well, I may wear your fashions and work at 9 to 5, but I told you all along, there are some things that I won't compromise. Now those worthless people didn't want me, they said I was too direct. So I went home and I trashed myself. My friend Jay said, what'd you expect? They want you to live a lie so you'll get on the radio. But you keep on doing what you do as you pull it in the show. I said, I know, I know. But the brothers who can't disguise it, even in men's clothing, and the sisters who just do my best. Have a present, or to have the pride, but you were so disrespectful. On your birthday I just cried. There's a fleet of ships on the Hudson, and they said it was open hand. And when he offered me passage, I said, there is no promise made. On the rooftop,
tonight I'm feeling righteous. I've got my music and my chords. And though the silence may be screaming, who just do not fail. Comes the spirit of my people, courage over fear. Comes the only truth I find. When the enemies are near, it all before the struggles were over, we would still be
have been listening to Queer Voices, heard each Monday at 9 p.m. here on KPFT, a publicly funded Pacifica Network station. Queer Voices is produced live in Houston with recorded segments from This Way Out, which is produced at KPFK in Los Angeles, and J.D. Doyle's Queer Music Heritage, which is produced in Houston. Queer Voices executive producer is Jack Valensky. On-air voices are Brian Levinka, Jennifer Renee, J.D. Doyle, Glenn Holt, Summer Iman, and Jack Valensky. For more information about tonight's program, including links to websites and organizations mentioned during the show, visit queervoices.org. And you can send email to jack at queervoices.org. Be sure to listen to KPFT every Sunday morning, starting at 1 a.m. for After Hours with Jimmy Carper. It's Queer Radio with Attitude. At 90.1 FM, this is KPFT Houston, a Pacifica Foundation station. For Queer Voices, I'm Glenn Holt.
Widely seen as the channel of reference for coverage of the Middle East and Global South, Al Jazeera English can now be heard on 90.1 KPFT. Al Jazeera English has become a world leader in the coverage of Africa, Asia, the Middle East, Europe, and the Americas. You can hear Al Jazeera English weekdays from 5 to 6 a.m. on KPFT FM and HD1, or at 9 a.m. weekdays on KPFT HD2. Al Jazeera English has received many awards for its reporting. With a staff of more than 1,000 from 50 different countries, the aim of Al Jazeera English is to provide independent and impartial news for an international audience. Again, you can hear Al Jazeera English weekdays from 5 to 6 a.m. on KPFT and HD1, or at 9 a.m. weekdays on KPFT HD2. Visit kpft.org for a complete program schedule. This is 90.1 KPFT Houston.
When you tune into KPFT, you notice something right away.
No ads.
KPFT is a non-commercial radio station. We don't accept advertising or underwriting from businesses, nor does KPFT receive payment for any program we air. KPFT further disallows product plugging or endorsements. We do this because you, the listener, deserve access to the radio you love,
without all the commercials, taglines, and cross-promotion that corporate radio subjects you to.
If you ever hear something on KPFT that you have concerns about, please contact our program director at 7- 513-526-4000 during regular business hours. If you enjoy this kind of option on Houston's airwaves, become a member. KPFT is able to stay commercial-free because listeners like you make a pledge of support to keep us on the air. Your pledge is important. Call our membership department at 713-526-4000 or visit kpft.org to support KPFT with a pledge. Jason, can you give us that number again?
713-526-4000 or kpft.org to become a member.
KPFT, Houston.
Did you know you can find KPFT on the social networking sites Twitter and Facebook? You certainly can, and we'd love you to add us as a friend and get us connected with friends of yours. Join our fan page and check out a special video message from General Manager Dwayne Bradley, as well as keep up with KPFT programmers and staff. Visit facebook.com/KPFT Houston to join us. To follow us, visit twitter.com/KPFT. With both, you can link up with other KPFT listeners, get the latest news about the station, and find lots of extras. It's fun, so catch up with KPFT online. Again, on Twitter, visit twitter.com/KPFT. On Facebook, visit us at facebook.com/KPFT Houston. This is commercial-free, listener-sponsored Pacifica Radio, 90.1 KPFT Houston.
One love, this is Ziggy Marley. I'm saying, keep on...